Sarva Shastra Dipiusha Sarva Vedaika Satpala Sarva Siddhanta Ratnadya Sarva Lokaika Drikpada Sarva Bhagavata Prana Shrimad Bhagavata Prabhu Kali Dwantu Ditaditya Shri Krishna Parivartita Padamananda Pataya Prema Varshakshadayate Sarvada Sarva Sevyaya Shri Krishnaya Namostume Madhika Bandha Matsangin Madguru Madmahadana Madhistaraka Madbhagya Madananda Namostute Sadhu Sadhu Tadayin Adini Chochatakara Anamuncha Kadachin Mam Narit Kantayoks Buddha Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Is it text number 3?
Yak swanu bhava makila shuti saram ekam. Atyatma deepam atititir shitam tamundam. Samsari nam karunayaha purana guhyam. Tam vyasa sunum upayami gurun muninam. Yak swanu bhava makila shuti saramikam. Makila shuti saramikam. Adhyatma deepam atititir shatam tamundam. Samsarinam karunayaha purana guhyam. Tam vyasa sunum upayami gurum muninam. Yaha hi hu swa anubhavam.
Self-assimilated. Experienced.
Akila.
All around.
Shruti.
The Vedas.
Saram.
Cream.
Ekam.
The only one.
Adhyatma.
Transcendental.
Deepam.
Torchlight.
Atititir Shatam.
Desiring to overcome.
Tamandam.
Deeply dark, material existence.
Samsarinam.
Of the materialistic men.
Karunaya.
Out of causeless mercy.
Aha.
Said.
Purana.
Supplement to the Vedas.
Guhyam,
very confidential.
Tam,
unto him.
Vyasasunum,
the son of Vyasadeva.
Upayami,
let me offer my obeisances.
Gurum,
the spiritual master.
Muninam,
of the great sages. translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto Him, Shuka, the spiritual master of all sages, the son of Vyasadev, who out of His great compassion for those gross materialists who struggled to cross over the darkest regions of material existence, spoke this most confidential supplement to the cream of Vedic knowledge, after having personally assimilated it by experience. Purport. In this prayer, Srila Suta Goswami practically summarizes the complete introduction of Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam is the natural supplementary commentary on the Vedanta Sutras. The Vedanta Sutras, or the Brahma Sutras, were compiled by Vyasadeva with a view to presenting just the cream of Vedic knowledge. Srimad Bhagavatam is the natural commentary on this cream. Srila Shukadeva Goswami was a thoroughly realized master on the Vedanta Sutras. And consequently, he also personally realized this commentary, Srimad Bhagavatam. And just to show His boundless mercy upon bewildered materialistic men who want to cross completely over nescience, He recited for the first time this confidential knowledge. There is no point in arguing that a materialistic man can be happy. No materialistic creature, be he the great Brahma or an insignificant ant, can be happy. Everyone tries to make a permanent place for happiness, but everyone is baffled by the laws of material nature. Therefore, the materialistic world is called the darkest region of God's creation. Is that talking going on inside or outside? Can you check? Yet the unhappy materialist can get out of it simply by desiring to get out. Unfortunately, they are so foolish that they do not want to escape. Therefore, they are compared to the camel who relishes thorny twigs because he likes the taste of twigs mixed with blood. He does not realize that it is his own blood and that his tongue is being cut by the thorns. Similarly, to the materialist, his own blood is as sweet as honey. And although he is always harassed by his own material creations, he does not wish to escape. Such materialists are called karmis. Out of hundreds of thousands of karmis, only a few may feel tired of material engagement and desire to get out of the labyrinth. Such intelligent persons are called gyanis. The Vedanta Sutra is directed toward such gyanis. But Srila Vyasadeva, being the incarnation of the Supreme Lord, could foresee the misuse of the Vedanta Sutra by unscrupulous men. And therefore he personally supplemented the Vedanta Sutra with the Bhagavata Purana. It is clearly said that this Bhagavatam is the original commentary on the Brahma Sutras. Srila Vyasadeva also instructed the Bhagavatam to his own son, Srila Shukadeva Goswami, who was already at the liberated stage of transcendence. Srila Shukadeva realized it personally and then explained it. By the mercy of Srila Shukadeva, the Bhagavad Vedanta Sutra is available for all those sincere souls who want to get out of material existence. There's one more paragraph. I'll leave that for a little while. Here, Suta Goswami is doing the necessary. How can we recite Bhagavatam without offering proper respects to Shukadeva Goswami? Shukaproktam. This Bhagavatam is characterized as the Purana spoken by Shukadeva. Other Puranas are spoken by other sages, and they're all re-narrated at Naimisharanya by Sutta Ugrashravasutta. All the Puranas were spoken by Sutta Goswami, but they each have original speakers. Vishnu Purana was spoken previously by Parashara Muni, the father of Vyasadeva. But the son of Vyasadeva, Shukadeva, spoke this Bhagavatam. And we read today's verse. Shukadeva Goswami puts himself in the list of genealogy. And what he says is that my father passed over all his other disciples and picked me to be the receiver of Srimad Bhagavatam. That is what Shukadeva Goswami himself considers his own special, most important personality characteristic. In the who's who among sages, short listing, Shukadeva Goswami marks himself as, because when you were put into this who's who book, they ask you to write a biography of yourself, and they put it in the book. So Shukadeva's autobiography is, my father picked me to hear the Bhagavatam instead of all his other disciples. Here it is. Shukadeva heard the Bhagavatam, and Sutta Goswami is highlighting here, out of great compassion for the ignorant, helpless, misled persons in Kali Yuga, he spoke the Bhagavatam. If he had just studied it and kept it for himself, you know, earned his degree, passed his test, and then forgot about it. If he didn't speak the Bhagavatam after hearing it, then he wouldn't be what he is. The most beneficent, Guru Muninam. Spiritual master is an ocean of mercy, or a rain cloud of mercy. Karunya gana gana tvam. Gana gana gana. Gana by itself means cloud. Gana gana is a heavy cloud. Dark rain cloud. Gana means dense, because it's a condensation of water vapor. Scientifically, nothing. That's not just poetry, it's science. Cloud is, what is a cloud? Condensation of water vapor. But when you have a heavy condensation, gana gana, that is a dark rain cloud about to shower its rain. So the spiritual master is like such a cloud. Because a cloud is not discriminating, it will drop its mercy on the dry, barren fields, on the rocks, on the ocean where there's already plenty of water, and where it's really needed. It will simply distribute its water everywhere. That is unconditional mercy. So Shukadeva, in that kind of mood of unconditional mercy, he's given the Bhagavatam for everybody. It's not some secret that only a few people can have the Bhagavatam. It's kept secret from others. It's not a secret doctrine. It's a public doctrine. Everybody in India knows the Bhagavatam. You can buy it in any bookstore. What to speak of these Hare Krishna devotees coming in and cramming it down everybody's throat, you know, making you buy one in the airport. So Bhagavatam is widely distributed. It is publicly available. Thanks to the mercy of Shukadeva. This is the Shukadeva edition of the Bhagavatam. Before Shukadeva spoke it, it was only heard by a few. Vyasadeva knew it. And he didn't have anybody suitable to tell it to. His other disciples had material interests. And those who have material interests are not ready to hear the Bhagavatam. That's why it was spoken last at Naimisharanya. Only after the sages got everything else out of their system were they ready to hear Bhagavatam. We should try to become ready to hear Bhagavatam. Get everything else out of our system as quickly as possible. Kick all of their interests out. And just study this science of Krishna consciousness from the lips of Shukadeva Goswami. That's our focus. This is education. There are different kinds of education. We can train you up to get into Cambridge University, or to get a good job, or to entertain people, but we want to train you up to be absorbed in the nectar of the Bhagavatam and living according to the precepts of the Bhagavatam. This compassion is Sukadeva's special quality. Without it, we wouldn't have the Bhagavatam. It's thanks to his kindness. And it's not discriminating kindness that he was born in Nepal. So he wasn't just out to help the Nepalis. You know, some Nepali mutual aid society founded by Sukadeva. No. He was concerned for everybody, not just his own countrymen, not just his own community, the Agarwals or whoever. You know, the sage's sons, the Rishi Putras. He was only interested in helping the Rishi Putras. He was interested in helping all the samsaris. Everybody caught up in the cycle of material birth and death. That's everybody. The cats and the dogs, the demigods, the sages, us human beings, everybody. We're all samsaris. No matter what we think we are, no matter how we distinguish ourselves, one from another, and think we're better or worse than somebody else, we're all samsaris. It's like the clothes in the washing machine. It's all going around together. So we're all going around together in this cycle of birth and death. And out of mercy for all of us, Sukadeva has spoken this most confidential of Puranas, Purana Guhyam. And he followed the first principle of effective preaching, which is, what? Well, that's there. That's why you preach, but how should you preach? You should preach according to your realization. Don't talk above your own head. Don't get too fancy and talk about things you haven't realized. It won't be effective. It won't be potent. Say what you know, what you've realized. Svanubhavam. Let it be simple if your understanding is simple. Just speak it simply then. Don't try to just impress people. This speaker, Sukadeva, is speaking out of sheer compassion. That means he's not motivated by desire for prestige or money. He couldn't be. If he was another one of those professional Bhagavatam reciters, in it for the money and reputation and for the followers and the power and influence you can get, then he would be disqualified to be the real speaker of Srimad Bhagavatam. He'd be another cheater, another charlatan. His qualification to be the perfect speaker of Srimad Bhagavatam, the original speaker, is that he has no selfish motive. No selfish motive at all. Only wants to help others. Is not trying to gain any profit for himself. What businessman can do his business not trying to make a profit? Even outside the world of business, the great soldiers in the army, the generals, just like the American Revolution. I'm sorry, get into a mundane example. I'll keep it short. We worship in America the fathers of our nation. We put them on our bills. Alexander Hamilton on the $10 bill. You know, he was a lieutenant, you know, personal assistant of George Washington in fighting the British for independence. So he's glorified as someone who sacrificed for the freedom of the nation. But he was an ambitious young man. He was also in it for advancing his position by being connected with the general George Washington and being successful in the war. He expected to make it big and become an important man. Unfortunately, he got into a fight and died in a duel. Aaron Burr shot him to death in a personal quarrel. So he didn't get to become president of the United States or anything like that. All he got was his picture on the $10 bill. But he was ambitious. He had selfish motives. He's excused for that by history, because everybody had. I'm sorry, everybody in this world has selfish motives. So in ordinary history, we're excused for them. But not in transcendental history. You want to be a real big man, in the real sense, you have to give up selfish motives. You want to be on the level of these sages like Shukadev, then you have to be selfless. You can't be an ambitious young man out to make it in this world. That's the opposite of a real student of Srimad Bhagavatam. You have to be dead to the world. You may be wearing saffron, you may be wearing white, but you have to be a dead man. No interest for material success. Hard for when you're 20s, in your 20s, to think of yourself as dead. It's easy to think of when you're in your late 50s, that you're staring death in the face. But we all are, and we have to give up all material ambitions and have only the ambition to follow in the footsteps of Shukadev Goswami, not to imitate, but to become a preacher in his line. That is becoming a really successful person. Maybe not big in the eyes of the rest of the world, but it will satisfy Prabhupada and satisfy Krishna. Who's ready to do that? Even among our own devotees, who's ready to do that? To give up all selfish material interests and actually satisfy Prabhupada, dedicate your whole life selflessly. I'll read the last paragraph of the purport. Srimad Bhagavatam, Prabhupada says, is the one unrivaled commentary on Vedanta Sutra. Sripad Shankaracharya intentionally did not touch it because he knew that the natural commentary would be difficult for him to surpass. He wrote his Sharirika Bhashya, and his so-called followers deprecated the Bhagavatam as some new presentation. One should not be misled by such propaganda directed against the Bhagavatam by the Mayavad school. From this introductory shloka, the beginning student should know that Srimad Bhagavatam is the only transcendental literature meant for those who are paramahansas and completely freed from the material disease called malice. The Mayavadis are envious of the personality of Godhead, despite Sripad Shankaracharya's admission that Narayana, the personality of Godhead, is above the material creation. The envious Mayavadi cannot have access to the Bhagavatam, but those who are really anxious to get out of this material existence may take shelter of this Bhagavatam because it is uttered by the liberated Srila Shukadeva Goswami. It is the transcendental torchlight by which one can perfectly see the transcendental absolute truth realized as Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. Shankaracharya intentionally did not speak anything on the topic of Srimad Bhagavatam. He did not write any commentary on it. Did not even quote from it or refer to it. And Jiva Goswami explains why. Although he did talk about Krishna, it's not that he didn't say anything about Krishna in any of his books, but he wrote a commentary on the Bhagavad Gita, and of course his famous commentary on the Vedanta Sutra. He deals with Vedanta philosophy, he deals with explaining Krishna's own words, but the Bhagavatam he doesn't touch. Out of great respect for the Bhagavatam, he did not want, because everything he touched, he polluted with this Mayavad philosophy. It was his duty to do that, to misinterpret. He himself tells his wife, Parvati, Mayavadam asachastram prachannam bhavadam ishyate mayeva vihita devi kalau brahmana murtina. My dear Devi, you can call your wife Devi, but Lord Shiva has the first privilege, because his wife is Devi, the original Devi. My dear Devi, goddess, In Kali Yuga, I have a special mission to teach, to disseminate this Mayavad doctrine. It is Asat Shastram, Asat, invalid philosophy. But Krishna has ordered me to teach it. He wants me to teach it so that it's disseminated very potently. Who can bewilder better than Lord Shiva, the most powerful creature? Pachanam Bauram Ishyate. Actually, it's just simply very thinly covered Buddhism. Same impersonal voidism as the Buddhist philosophy. Just we pretend to have an absolute truth, but that absolute truth has no qualities. It's empty. So an empty something is as good as nothing. It's zero. Has no content. It's something. It's a number, but it doesn't amount to anything. Zero. And in Kali Yuga, it's my duty, it's my mission to spread that philosophy. So Lord Shiva admits it, that it's invalid philosophy. So he didn't want to also, in the same way, pollute with his Mayavad interpretation, the Srimad Bhagavatam. He therefore did not comment on it. Didn't even quote one shloka from it anywhere. But to show respect from a distance, Jiva Goswami explains, he indirectly alluded to the Bhagavatam by some of his stotras, his prayers of praise. He wrote for different deities, and he wrote several, a few of them for Krishna, Govinda, Krishna. And in one Gopal Ashtaka, one Govinda Ashtaka, he mentions some leelas that are only described in Srimad Bhagavatam and no other shastra. And that is his indirect way of praising the Bhagavatam. So he showed his respects, but he didn't directly, quote, cite or comment on anything from the Bhagavatam. But his followers are so shameless that they have no compunctions against writing commentaries, posing as Bhagavatam reciters, as lovers of Krishna, even though they're hateful impersonalists. This is the greatest shame, shamelessness. We should not hear the Bhagavatam from anybody who's associating with such impersonalists. We should never go to hear from them. Impersonalists and materialists. Let the materialists preach to other materialists. Let the Mayavadis preach to the Mayavadis. You know, okay, it's good. Bhagavatam is good for everybody. You can't ruin the Bhagavatam. But we shouldn't hear it from the materialist. We, who are following the pure devotee, should not hear the Bhagavatam from materialists, and certainly not from Mayavadis or anybody who's even faintly influenced by the Mayavadis. Murari Gupta was going to hear, maybe just because his friend was talking or he had some reason, good reason, he went to listen to the Adhyatma Ramayana, which is a Mayavadi version. I'm sorry, Yoga Vashishta Ramayana. And Lord Chaitanya ejected him from his company. Said, I don't want to see Murari Gupta. Don't let him come see me. Only because he went to hear from some Mayavadi. And probably he had a good reason. But Lord Chaitanya set the example. Don't even associate with people who hear from the Mayavadis. What to speak of the Mayavadis directly? We want to hear Srimad Bhagavatam from the devotees who are faithful representatives of Shukadev Goswami. So not that we can't hear from anybody outside of ISKCON, although we have a strict rule in this school to play it safe and don't go outside. Don't go outside to hear. Do your parikrama, do your shopping. You can be friendly to people, but don't take their spiritual instructions outside of ISKCON, please. We want to keep this community pure. And we don't want to take risks. You can stop by many bhajan kutirs around the parikrama marg, but please don't go around listening to spiritual instruction from those who are outside the family of Srila Prabhupada. That's just the principle rule we have here. And more generally, even if you go outside of this rule-bound community, in general, followers of Srila Prabhupada, we should not hear from materialists or impersonalists. There are others who are faithful followers of Lord Chaitanya. We can hear from them, but we should be discriminating. We must verify that they actually are faithful and not influenced by the Mayavadis and not too materialistic. But we don't want to offend the Bhagavatam. We don't want to dissatisfy Srila Prabhupada. We can argue Bhagavatam is all pure. You can hear it from anybody. Okay, but we cannot expect success and happiness if we displease Srila Prabhupada and we displease the Bhagavatam. That we always have to take into consideration. Sukadeva Goswami was faithful to his father, his guru, and it's expected that his followers be faithful to him. Hare Krishna. So, are there any questions or comments? Prahlad Nandapur?
Yes, when we are going for book distribution, sometimes I have also faced many Mayavadis and was also trying to distribute books to them. And sometimes they are doing argument, and sometimes they are something speaking about Radha Krishna and about Bhagavatam directly. So what we should do at that place?
If you see a Mayavadi, you should try to, especially if it's in public, and other people can get benefit from hearing what you're saying, then try to defeat them. Point out the errors in the Mayavad philosophy. If they want to talk philosophy, okay. Then come out with both guns shooting and defeat them. Don't make friends with the Mayavadis and say, yes, you're okay, I'm okay, especially in public. And if you cannot defeat them, better avoid them. You know, we're not going to have friendly philosophical discussions with Mayavadis.
And we should stay, I mean, sometimes we are spending one night or like this, when we are in Sankirtan movement, like buses are going to their ashrams and we are staying there.
At Mayavadi ashram.
Yeah, sometimes. Well, when there is no place to stay.
Okay, but then you're a busload of devotees. It's a few devotees, not just one.
Oh, okay.
So stick to yourselves. You know, don't talk too much. Don't become too friendly with the Mayavadis. You know, you can accept a place on the floor in their ashram, but it doesn't mean you have to listen to all their stuff.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes. Okay. I'm sorry, Jagat Prabhu had his head up first. Yes, sir.
You told that the primary objective of our school is to teach us Srimad Bhagavatam in our authoritative line. Sometimes I find myself that I'm more intensive in studying of grammar rather than being absorbed in studying Srimad Bhagavatam, because this is a really difficult subject, Sanskrit grammar. It takes almost all the time. And should we go for such a compromise, or how to say it?
Maybe not. You have to reconsider your life. Each individual has to look. Is this right for me? You know, if you want to discuss it, I'm open to discuss it. You know, am I doing the right thing? I'm spending 90% of my time memorizing sutras, and I have no time for my sadhana and no time for the bhavana. But maybe you shouldn't be doing it then. You know, if it's so, especially if for someone for whom it's very hard to do the studying, and you have to, in order to manage to keep up with the studying, you have to give up your spiritual life. It's not worth it then. Then it's not worth it. It shouldn't be over difficult. For some, it'll be too difficult. For others, it'll be a little less difficult. So we tried to not make the program too heavy that, you know, you have to stop chanting your rounds in order to learn the sutras. And we try to keep in the scheduled program enough Bhagavatam, at least the minimum. But for some individuals, it'll be too hard. And then you just be honest and realize, well, you know, I'm not going to sell my soul to the devil just to learn some grammar. But, okay, another way to look at it is, as long as you're still chanting your rounds, at least, and be able to come to the scheduled programs, maybe you don't have an extra 3 hours to sit and read Bhagavatam in the afternoon, but at least you're doing the minimum. If so, then you can just be patient that for the next 2 years, I'm going to have to focus on grammar. And that grammar, I should put, after having wasted those 2 years, I should put it to good use. Otherwise, it was a waste. After, you know, sacrificing 2 years that I could have been doing something more directly Krishna conscious, now I got to dovetail it. When you've learned that grammar, then you should use it in Prabhupada's service. Then it's excused. Otherwise, it was a waste. It takes 2 years, 3 years to learn all this, and then never use it for Prabhupada's service, or use it against Prabhupada, then it's a waste, or worse. So, it's an investment. It's a special engagement. It's, in a way, a distraction, but it's not going to last forever. And as long as you intend to use it for Prabhupada's purposes, then it's okay. The authorities of ISKCON are approving it as an acceptable engagement. I think everybody here, their gurus have given them their blessings to go ahead and try to do this. So with the blessings of guru and with the blessings of the senior Vaishnavas, you can take the risk. Okay.
Yes, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Lord Chaitanya gave 64 different meanings for valid meanings for the Atmarama verse. And does that mean that every verse in Bhagavatam has multiple valid meanings? This becomes important because sometimes we come across some apparent differences amongst the Vaishnavacharyas in their commentaries. And how do we reconcile them?
Because, yes, the Bhagavatam has multiple meanings. I don't know if we can quantify it exactly, that there are so-and-so meanings for each verse, you know, exact number. But there tends to be multiple meanings. That is actually a quality of great poetry in general, even mundane poetry. Shlesha, or double entendre, a statement carrying more than one idea at the same time, is a quality of great poetry. Without some of that, you cannot have poetry at all. And the Bhagavatam, beside everything else it is also poetry. Of course, the Bhagavatam could do its job without multiple meanings. You know, could do it simply without being poetry. But the Bhagavatam is more attractive. It's like the medicine. If it tastes sweet, it can do its job even if it's bitter, but it's more pleasant when the medicine tastes good. So the Bhagavatam is tasteful because it's very poetic. And one of the primary qualities of poetry is the ability to carry multiple meanings. It makes it more relishable and something more for the mind to engage with, more interesting. So yes, you know, Bhagavatam is extremely poetic. Compared to other Puranas, Bhagavatam is much more poetic. And therefore the language is more difficult than other Puranas. Especially, and what makes poetry difficult, poetic language difficult, is one of the main things that makes poetic language difficult is this quality of saying more than one thing at the same time. But that's poetry for you. Okay? Yes?
In that case, how do we reconcile the apparent differences or contradictions that we might encounter?
Well, one is that poetry is allowed to transcend the laws of ordinary logic. You know, in the material world, physical world, you have law of excluded middle. You know, if it's blue, it's not red. It can't be both. It can't be both yes and no. It's yes or no. Is it red? Yes. No. Well, it can't be both yes and no, but in poetry it can. In poetry, you can have apparent contradictions. Because the poet creates his own world. in which is not just one sun, but 1,000 suns, 1,000 moons. And the sun and the moon are, you know, and all the stars are all up in the sky at the same time. Impossible things can be created, can be imagined by a poet. So also, apparent contradictions are there in the transcendental Shastra, in the transcendental literature. It's also Mahabharata. I think Mahabharata, Madhvacharya gave a challenge that he could explain each verse in Mahabharata 10 ways or 100 ways. And he did it very, very, very convincingly. That's Mahabharata, which is not as poetic as, not as powerful and poetic as Bhagavatam. I don't know how many meanings you can take out of each verse, but there are there. And therefore you'll see commentators saying different things about the same words. And they can be both true, even though a strict logician, a hard-nosed scientist would object. How can it be this and the opposite at the same time? Just like Bhagavad Gita example, aparyaptam tadasmakam balam. Our strength is aparyaptam. So Vishwanath says it means sufficient. Duryodhana is saying our army is strong enough. And then Baladev says the opposite. No, it means insufficient. He's afraid that they'll be defeated. And both give their arguments. And Baladev is a disciple, a Shiksha disciple of Vishwanath. He's not going to disagree with his guru, you know, to insult him. But it's just commentators do that. They give different viewpoints, even apparently contradictory ones. And it all is reconcilable. It can mean one, it can mean both, one or the other. Okay. Yes, ma'am.
He had taken Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita and he was reading it. And this Bananjay Govindacharya, he went to him, and that person, like, he's too constricted in his thinking. So Madhva also gives that aparyaptam means not enough. So he said, this Bananjay Govindacharya started saying, this is the actual meaning. So many other people have written meanings. They don't know Sanskrit. And like this person, he just left.
Left his head.
Yeah, he had come and he was coming to the programs, and then he went there and he heard him, and I tried to convince him, but it was like he started saying that he's Trivikram Pandit and all this thing, so he was too much.
Sorry. It's unfortunate. Unfortunate that has to happen. That you lose your faith over one word.
Yeah. And there's a slogan in Chaitanya Charitamrita, right? Like Prati Shabda Nana Artha Hoy something. Nana Artha Hoy, something like that, it ends.
Every verse has many, every yes. word has many meanings. Yes. Every word of what? Bhagavatam?
Bhagavatam.
Yes. Yes. So therefore the commentation gets complicated. If every word has many meanings, then it can confuse a person with a rigid mind. It's just too much. Can't handle all that.
Well, I think that many meanings in the sense that, okay, that maybe the word combinations can give many meanings. But many meanings...
Nanartha means... that one word has more than one meaning. There are many such words.
Yes. But then even in the sense of relevance to different situations, like as a person is advancing in a spiritual life and getting realizations, so the verse becomes, the relevance of the verse is felt to him at different levels.
Yes. There's different, you know, different levels of meaning. There's literal meaning. That may be relatively fixed. But then you have the purport. That will vary from person to person. The significance, as you say, the relevance or the significance. You know, the father says, go get my belt. And for one son, it means, oh, your father has to put his pants up. The other son, it means he's going to beat me. So the relevance varies according to the person in the situation. Yes.
There was a lot of anatomy vritti going on, and then now in the fifth canto, we saw how
Rishabhadeva and now Jadabharata, they are showing that the soul is completely independent from the body, and you can be completely happy, situated in absolute platform, even in spite of any condition that of the material body. So they are showing that, and they are preaching so heavily to King Rahugana. Jadabharata is speaking about the how he should give up the bodily conception. So how can we actually assimilate this more and more in such a way that as we read we can get realization before we go on, but so that we can actually...
Well, we should be introspective. We should be receptive to the possibility that we're being preached to, not just for everybody else. That all the fault finding is directed to somebody else, not to me. But this is my anarta. When you get up to that one, the one that's in your heart, then you got to take it seriously. If you're willing to look inside your heart and see the faults. So we have to come as willing patients. We didn't come to the doctor's office just to discuss the weather with him. We're sick, and we have to admit that you're sick. You know, and take some advice and treatment. So we have to go to the Bhagavatam as willing patients, willing to take the medicine. I don't know if that answers it well. Okay. Hi, Guru. We should not which? We should not listen to them? Yeah, that's a rule for this school. You know, if you maybe in some other ashram you're allowed to go, but we have to be very strict here. We haven't arranged any such katha here. Well, suppose they also hire dancing girls, to do Bharatanatyam. Should the brahmacharis go see them? Yeah, the public, for the public, not for the brahmacharis. So you may have a symposium and invite all sorts of crazy mayavadis and who knows who, just to bring them all together. It doesn't mean all the brahmacharis have to go and listen to them. Why should he? If he's faithful, he won't. If he's satisfied with the katha inside the temple, why does he have to go outside for katha? Prabhupada didn't like it when Nitai and others, I'm sorry to mention names, sorry, when some devotees were going outside, to hear when they had plenty to hear inside the ISKCON compound. He said, don't go. Some of these devotees lost their spiritual life because they dissatisfied Prabhupada, going around Vrindavan, listening to everybody and anybody. Not only because of what they heard, but because they displeased Prabhupada. Now, you got to consider the opinions and the desires of the guru when you're doing anything. Even if it's theoretically okay, if it's what the guru tells you not to do, then it's bad. Yeah. It depends. Would Prabhupada be pleased? We arrange a katha. Is this a loaded question? I mean, is somebody doing that? We arrange a katha and invite outsiders to come speak Bhagavatam. Well, I would say, I'm not organizing it, but if I was organizing a Bhagavad katha, I would only invite those who are not going to speak. I wouldn't invite materialists and Mayavadis. Only. Serious devotees. They may be outside ISKCON, but we could invite someone else to speak if he's unobjectionable, isn't going to speak some nonsense. But that would have to be done very expertly and carefully. If you just indiscriminately invite everybody who has something to do with the Bhagavatam, you're going to have a three-ring circus. Mayavadi's jumping through the hoops. Okay. Look at the shooting of cannons. Okay. Yes. She's not.
When I was in Sochi, Gopal Krishna Maharaj, he came there and he gave nice class. And after class, one Mataji, I think she was from Gaudiya Math, she's just arrogantly asked the question, who was Shukadeva?
I was in Sochi, there wasn't a Gaudiya Math there, but okay.
And she asked, who was Shukadeva Goswami in previous life? And Maharaj, he like humbly answered, he said, I don't know. It is not said in Shastras. And I was really surprised by his answer. I mean, I understand that you can't answer instead of him, but could you give some understanding why sometimes Maharajas, they don't answer like directly? Because even I know who
No, are you sure? Are you sure?
I mean,
are you sure who Sukadeva Goswami was in his previous life?
Yesterday.
I didn't say it yesterday. There are accounts in the Bhagavatam about Shukadeva, but there are different Shukadevas. It's not necessarily the same person. Just because it's the same name doesn't mean it's necessarily the same person. There are at least two different Shukadevas that are different. One of them was a grihastha. The other one never got married. The Shukadeva who got married is described in the Devi Bhagavat. You know? So I'm not sure if that Shukadeva who was the parrot and entered the womb of Srimati Radharani, what is it? Is that it? Or who's? Rather the womb of. Anyway, who? You know. Anyway, that parrot. I'm not sure. I'm not so sure it's the same Shukadeva. So we should be a little careful before quoting that as the story. It might be somebody else's story. So I think Gopal Krishna Raj was right in saying, "I'm not sure. I don't know." I don't know either. I agree with him. I don't know.
Okay, it means that we have to be careful when we say that Shukadeva Goswami that explained Bhagavatam, he was parrot.
It may not have been the same person. May not have been the same Shukadeva. It may have been a different Shukadeva. I'm not sure, but I have to say I don't know.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right. Okay. No, it's 9 o'clock. Last comment. Go ahead.
Comparison of camel chewing the thorns along with the blood. Is it for, it's for the materialist example it's giving, but even for, like neophyte devotees like me who have the materialistic mentality, so how do we come over this?
It's typically given as an example of illicit sex. You know, you're enjoying the sensation of losing your semana. The semana is produced. Each drop of semana, according to Prabhupada at least, I think it's also Ayurveda, each drop of semana requires 40 drops of blood to be produced. So you're enjoying the taste of your own blood. So I think Prabhupada explains that also in the Svava Vidhastra Kuraik's verse in the purport, that this is the person who enjoys the taste of sex. So I hope the neophyte devotees aren't doing that. Maybe it could be applied, it could be interpreted another way, but that's the interpretation I've heard. Okay, let's stop now. Thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam, Ki Jai.